Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Anybody down for an NBA trade? Anybody down for an NBA trade? Actually, what went down yesterday was not a trade. That was pretty much all of the trades. Like, every single trade happened yesterday, and they happened 2 months before the actual NBA trade deadline. That's how jacked up things have become between James Harden and the Rockets. That deal went down 2 months before the deadline. Like, they had to move that guy. So the monster trade involved four teams, about a million players, picks, swaps, protected, and unprotected. So let's try and work our way through this. You've got James Harden going to Brooklyn, which is not a surprise. They had to make the move. Harden had pretty much given up on them altogether, and that Harden toxicity was spreading quickly throughout the locker room and the organization. This guy was doing everything he possibly could to get the hell out of there, to get them to move him. So they did. The question then is, who would get him? The Sixers look like they had a pretty good look at it, except it's clear that either they didn't have enough or they were not willing to meet Houston's asking price. Ben Simmons and pieces were not going to get that deal done. And no, the Rockets did not get that one stud standout player that they said they needed in order to move Harden. Instead, the Rockets are going to go rebuild. They get four first-round picks and four pick swaps and three players. I mean, things got so wacky yesterday that Victor Oladipo is now a Rocket. And Caris LeVert is a Pacer. And Jarrett Allen is now one of about a million big men in Cleveland. Think about that for a minute. I know he's still working his way back from injury, but still, a two-time All-Star like Victor Oladipo gets traded, but it's an absolute afterthought, a throw-in detail later on. Because we know what this comes down to. What this really is all about is James Harden going to Brooklyn. James Harden joining forces with Kevin Durant and the roster spot currently known as Kyrie Irving. And the questions are pretty simple. Namely, did Houston get enough in return for one of the greatest scorers in NBA history? Namely, are the Nets going to win a championship now? Because from Brooklyn's perspective, that's what that deal has to be about. You don't give up what they gave up just to get to the NBA Finals. If that's the best that you can do, then you just made a bad trade. Getting to the finals is not good enough. You give up that many assets to get that guy better deliver a championship. It's ring or bust for the Nets. Now, as for Houston, anytime you trade one of the greatest scorers in NBA history, you're going to lose. You're going to lose that trade. You can't win that trade because you're never going to get equal value back for that. It's just not possible, especially when one of the greatest scorers ever is now one of the most miserable guys ever because of the spot that he found himself in. So Harden forced their hand. So no, already you're not going to get equal value for a Hall of Famer who's pretty much still in his prime. And the fact that he hated it there and everybody knew it didn't exactly strengthen their bargaining position. So they did pretty well given the circumstances. But no, they did not get that one alpha in return for Harden. But they did get a bleep ton of picks. And they're going to bank on the fact that the Nets picks are going to be valuable because the Nets experiment is going to be a disaster. And honestly, that might not be a bad bet. If that's what they're betting on, that's not the worst bet in the world. Because as good as the Nets appear to be on paper, they may be an actual disaster in reality. The dysfunction factor is so high with that team, and the Nets can't afford that. Again, this team's got to win a ring, or rings, and anything less than that's going to be a major disappointment. The Nets are not giving up three first-round picks, four pick swaps, and multiple players just to advance in the playoffs. They're not doing that just to be competitive in the East. You don't make a move like that. You don't assemble a roster with Kevin Durant, James Harden, and Kyrie Irving and then hope to just make a deeper run. You do it to win a championship. That's it. Or championships.
Championship. So,
thanks, Rit. That helped. So the biggest question mark about this deal is, can the Nets win it all? I mean, sure, it's one hell of a big three. And you can Photoshop that crew together all you want, and it looks scary as hell. But right now, that's all they are. That's all the big three is. Right now, all the big three is a shop job. Because right now it's a big two. A big two and a guy who's missing at least six games so he can party and participate in political campaigns. I mean, you get right down to it. There is no guarantee that that big three ever actually assembles. And then if it does, there's no guarantee that it actually works. I mean, do you really think that Kyrie Irving, who pushed back hard at the idea of being a number two to LeBron James, is going to just be happy being the number three to Kevin Durant and James Harden? Yeah, right. Because Kyrie is such a team guy, as evidenced by his abandoning his team as we speak and going AWOL. And then even if he does come back, do you really think that Kyrie signed with the Nets to get scraps from the other two guys? Because I sure as hell don't. And again, do you even know if he's coming back? And if he is, when? Will the big three work? Who the hell knows? We didn't even get a chance to see if the previous big two worked, KD and Kyrie, before Kyrie took off for, quote, personal reasons. I can tell you this right now. Before they even step on the court, I can tell you this. It is not the best big three of all time, but it definitely is the weirdest big three of all time. I mean, you've got some really unusual personalities there. You've got the conspiracy kook who vanished for personal reasons only to pop up on Zoom calls with DA candidates and his sister's birthday party, maskless. Then you've got the superstar with maybe the thinnest skin in the game, the guy who used to actually sweat the love and attention that Mo Buckets used to get with Golden State. And then you've got James Harden, who just bad-attituded his way right out of Houston. Like, you know it's an interesting and weird big three when James Harden is the normal one. You know it's quite a crew when the guy who allegedly was giving a friend a bag full of honey buns and $100,000 is the normal one. You know things are off when the guy who jets off to Vegas on off days to party and then comes back to score 40 is the grounded one. So, is it going to work on the court? You know that old cliche, there's only one ball? Yeah, well, that cliche exists for a reason. Because there's only one ball. And all three of those guys are ball hogs. They're ball dominant guys that are used to getting theirs. And we're supposed to accept that they'll all be happy just to get less. That they will go along to get along. Yeah, that's always been the Kyrie way, right? Man, get out of here with that. When was the last time any of these three made personal sacrifices for the greater good? Ever? Now, if it does work, and I'm not saying that it can't. I'm saying I'm skeptical as hell. But if it does work, if somehow Kyrie does come back and does not kook out and they can all get on the same page and share the ball and actually at least occasionally run back on defense, man, that's pretty scary. They could be pretty frightening. Like, how many teams can defend the three-headed monster if it's working? Kevin Durant has been unguardable for years, and so far this season, he's back to that level after the Achilles injury. Harden, say what you want about the guy. He is a walking bucket. And then Kyrie. For all of his amazing weirdness, Kyrie can dominate a game still, too. Now, I would be concerned in a seven-game series because of what may or may not happen defensively. And then you've got the injury risk. And of course, you have all that chemistry too. But if they get it going on offense, that stuff might not matter. They might be able to turn every game into a shootout because they've got three of the greatest scorers. I'm never going to crack a team for taking a big swing. I'll never take a run at a team for doing anything and everything they can to make a run at a championship because not nearly enough teams do that. I mean, here's your dirty little secret. Not every team wants to win a world championship. Actually, chasing a championship is just too rich for some of these rich guys' blood. So then you have teams that just exist, teams that just take up space. The Nets are trying to do something. That's a big bleeping swing. I respect the hell out of it. But if you're looking for me to give a grade, it's too soon. But I can tell you this. I know it's going to be an A or it's going to be an F. And that's all any of us can ever really ask for. Man, don't waste my time by giving me a C. And if that chemistry somehow, some way does click, look out. If it doesn't, look out. Man, Steve Nash, how would you like to be Nash? He either walked into the best opportunity ever as a first-time head coach or the worst opportunity ever. Only time will tell. So, the Nets get the beard, so let's all get weird. And by the way, not that I hope for anything bad to be happening to Kyrie, but I really do hope that the reason Kyrie is out is because he is dealing with some really challenging stuff. And that it's not because he didn't like the hiring of Steve Nash or because he's not getting along with Durant. I mean, that's been some of the wacky speculation floating around. If that's the reason why this guy's not there, that he didn't like the hire or he's not getting along with Durant, if that really is the reason, and I'm not saying it is, I don't know. I'm just saying I've seen the speculation. If that really is why he's not there right now, he's not only the weirdest teammate ever, he's one of the worst teammates ever. Normally, I would not give a damn about the Brooklyn Nets. Could not interest me any less than they do. Now they're one of my favorite teams in all of sports. Because when it comes to team content, they're right near the top of the most dominant teams of all time.
Championship.
Jim Rome here. Why is Old Trapper beef jerky so good? Well, for one, there's something to be said for a family business that stands by quality and produces the world's finest beef jerky. Do not be fooled by the other brands. All beef jerky is not the same. Make sure you choose Old Trapper, where you can actually see the quality right through their iconic clear view packages. Every single bite of Old Trapper is tender. It's never tough because they use only the best ingredients, from their lean strips of beef seasoned with top quality spices to the real wood-fired smoke. Old Trapper delivers quality in every single bite. And Old Trapper jerky comes in four great flavors: Old Fashioned with a hint of brown sugar sweetness, teriyaki, peppered, and if you need a little more zing, there's hot and spicy. All are chock full of good protein to satisfy your manliest hunger cravings and to provide real sustained energy. Old Trapper is a better way to snack. Make sure Old Trapper is part of your weekly grocery list and keep a good supply on hand for you and your family. If you do not see it, ask for Old Trapper by name because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what is your beef? Greg McDermott is my guest. Greg, it's great to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jim. Great to join you.
It's great to visit with you. Thanks so much for doing it. Let me ask you about that win, Greg, on Saturday against St. John's. That was a game where you put up 56 in the first half, yet you led by 17 at the break, despite playing without Marcus Zagorowski. So how pleased were you with the way the team came out and took care of their business early on?
Well, very pleased, Jim. And, you know, obviously you give the message to your team all the time that the next guy's got to be ready when his number's called. And with Marcus being down, you know, Sharif Mitchell really stepped up in a huge way and answered the bell and had a great game, great floor game, scored it, and did a great job defensively as always. So, you know, when you're down at one of your important players, it's good to find a way to get a victory, especially in a convincing fashion.
You know, especially at a time like this, too, where everything is so unusual and so unconventional. That was your sixth consecutive win, which is a streak that started after you dropped the Big East opener. So what's been the biggest difference for the team during the streak?
You know, we found different ways to win. You know, Marquette played great against us in that first game and you know, made a lot of contested shots. And you know, actually that was maybe our best offensive game that we've played in conference play, and we lost. But we found a way to grind out some games, a really good win against a good UConn team on the road. We had a grinded out win at Providence and really won in the same fashion against Xavier here at home. So our guys are finding different ways to win with defense as well as our – obviously we have some explosiveness offensively and we have a group of unselfish players. But, you know, finding different ways to win, especially this year, the year of what's going to happen next, you know, just try to figure out to get to the next day and get a little bit better that day and then hopefully come out with a victory.
Creighton head basketball coach Greg McDermott, my guest. You know, going back to that Marquette game, Greg, the thing that I was really taken by and really impressed with, Mitch Balick, he said after the game, quote, "Are we going to go back and look in the mirror and make a change? If we don't make a change, then we're going to keep seeing the same results. Each one of us has to do that." I mean, one thing for you to say that, but as a coach, how happy are you to hear your players taking that approach?
He's an incredible leader, and we're blessed with great leadership on this team. And it's a veteran team, a lot of juniors and seniors, and that's, I think, helped us navigate through these difficult times with the pandemic. But you know, Mitch had 28 in that game, and we lost. And then, you know, a few games ago, he only took two shots, and we won. You know, so he just doesn't care. He's trying to impact winning in a lot of different ways, and understands the importance of ball movement in our offense. Yet he probably works as hard as anybody in our program at preparing himself, should he have to take a big shot at a critical time. So, you know, it's that kind of leadership, that kind of attitude. And as you said, it's one thing if the team hears it from a coaching staff member. It's another thing when you hear it from one of your senior leaders. And obviously, Mitch has been terrific in that regard.
Yeah, Greg, it's not the first time I've posed this question. I know it won't be the last. But the point that you just made about him, that he has prepared himself to take the big shot in the big moment, I mean, is that something you can prepare for? And if so, how? Or are you just hardwired to be that guy?
Well, you know, I think you have to prepare for it. You know, and you know, Marcus Zigorowski, for instance, was on the free throw line at the end of the Kansas game shooting three free throws and missed the last one that would have sent it into overtime. But I think Marcus can go back and look in the mirror after a game like that and know that he did everything he could to prepare himself for that moment. If you don't put in that time and that effort, then you have a hard time looking at yourself in the mirror because you feel like you cheated your teammates and you cheated your program. And, you know, Marcus is a guy that worked extremely hard, and Mitch is as well. And, you know, it doesn't mean that you're going to be successful in that moment, but you certainly increase your chances with preparation and repetition. And you know, we've got a lot of guys that spend a lot of time in the gym, and then when they're in that situation, I'm pretty confident that they're going to make the right play.
Creighton head basketball coach Greg McDermott's my guest. You know, last season, I know you're looking ahead, but last season you were picked to finish seventh in the Big East, and you end up winning a share of the regular season title, and you were ranked number seven in the country in the final AP poll. Like, when you look back on last season, were you surprised by what the team was able to accomplish, or did you know something that everybody outside the program didn't know?
You know, I think we had some pieces that I was really excited about. Denzel Mahoney was going to be eligible at Christmas time, and I really, you know, was happy with the progress of Christian Bishop. And, you know, last year we had Tyshawn Alexander and Mitch Balick on the wing, so, you know, we had a good group. And, you know, just how quickly will it come together when you add a guy like Mahoney at the semester? And, you know, we started 2-3 in the conference, and you know, still we're struggling to figure out a way to get Denzel kind of into the flow and not upset what we were already doing, but help make us better. And we really embraced one another, and we made a couple changes offensively to what we were doing, to more of a five outlook, and with Christian Bishop initiating a lot of offense from the center position. And we got on a run. And, you know, momentum's a crazy thing in the world of sports. Once you get going, that train's hard to stop. So, you know, I was not surprised with what they were able to accomplish last year. I was just disappointed that they didn't get to finish the job, you know, both in the Big East tournament and the NCAA tournament. That's what you play for, and unfortunately that was cut short.
No doubt. Like, you have the world of sports, and then you have the world at large. Last month, for instance, when you beat number 8 Xavier after the game, you were asked about the team wearing jerseys which have the word equality on them. Your answer to that question went viral as you explained how tough a year it's been for everybody and why people should use this time to care more for each other rather than less. What did you want people to take away from that?
Well, you know, it certainly seems to me the last 6, 7, 8 months in our country, like there's been so much division and so much hate. And at some point we got to realize that doesn't work. You know, like we have to try something different. And let's maybe open our minds and open our ears and listen to what other people have to say. And you know, understand where that person's coming from and try to care for that person and try to figure out a way to make the world better, just because I've broadened my horizons, because I've broke down and I've just been willing to listen with not already having a preconceived answer before I had listened to what someone else has to say. And, you know, it was important to our guys that the word equality on their jerseys is something that they decided upon, and that it means a lot to them. And you know, we have a little 45-second to 1-minute message that goes that we play in our games from some member of our program right before the national anthem each game at our home games, and it allows our guys a chance to speak and to be heard. And I think that's what we were after when we made the decision as a program to go that direction.
I think that's a great call. So really quickly, how much of all of that, those conversations coming together the last year in and of itself, how much or how closely has that brought your guys together as a team?
Yeah, I don't think there's any question that it has. I just think when you're, you can have an individual that can stand for something, and or you can have a group of people that stand for something. And I think the fact that, this group was united on what they chose to do, and they were all on board with it. And I think it's helped bring them closer together. And I think during this pandemic, it's one thing, athletes' lives in the athletic arena are certainly different, but a college athlete's life as a college student has changed dramatically. So they really don't have the social interactions with other students that they've had in the past. So all they have is each other. And I think it's really brought teams together across the country. And especially when you have an unselfish team that's not into themselves, I think it really allows a team like ours to grow closer together.
I know what you're talking about. We have a son who's a sophomore in college, and you're right, the social aspect of it is totally different. Greg McDermott, my guest. One final thought. This season, a number of coaches are taking a more casual look on the sideline. You've said you're a fan of that move. Do you miss putting on a suit, or do you think that maybe this is the look of the future?
Well, it's a look of the future for me. I know that. I'm a farm boy from Iowa, so, putting on a suit for me is not the most comfortable thing in the world. And, we're moving a lot on that sideline, Jim, and you're up and down out of the huddle, and it's just more comfortable. I know for my staff it's here to stay. What other people choose to do is up to them. But I just think the world in general has gone a little bit more casual from banking and to the corporate business world. People don't dress the way they used to in terms of they're a little bit more casual. So I'm hoping that college basketball will follow suit.
It's really interesting, right? Creighton is 10-2. They're number 6 in the coaches poll. They've got a big one coming up at Buffalo on Saturday. Their head coach is Greg McDermott. Greg, I appreciate you and the relationship. Great to have you back on the show. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Jim.
I got to ask you, Duval, how you feeling right now? I ask because according to various reports, it's not a matter of if, but rather a matter of when Urban Meyer becomes the new head coach in Jacksonville. Pretty interesting move, both for him and for the team. And a lot to unpack if, in fact, that's how that goes down. Let's start with this fact. The amount that Jacksonville is going to shell out for this guy is going to be completely and utterly enormous. Kind of like blank check stuff. Brinks truck stuff. Throw open the doors to the vault and just take as much money as you want, Herb stuff. Now, secondly, if that does happen, what's that say about Meyer? This is a guy who resigned from Florida for some sort of hodgepodge or mishmash of excuses. Something about wanting to spend more time with his family. Something about being disgusted with the state of college football. Never mind that he was a good part of the reason that there was a state of college football that he was disgusted with. All of that only to come rushing back the very moment the Ohio State job opened up. Remember, he left because of, quote, his family and the state of college football. But the second one of the better jobs opened up, he rushed right back into it. Only to get in hot water yet again for his role in the Zach Smith spousal abuse case. And then he retired a few months after that, once again blaming his health and saying, quote, I believe I will not coach again, end quote. Yeah, well, to quote a famous man, surprise, surprise, mother bleepers.
Surprise, surprise, motherfucker, the king is back.
Actually, it's not a surprise at all. Not as it relates to Herb, not if he's back. It's no surprise at all that roughly 2 years later, he is on the verge of coming back again. Because he's always been on the verge of coming back again. Even when he had a job, he was always on the verge of leaving that job and then giving some weird reason and then taking a new job months later. Now, this time it might be different. It might be different because this is the NFL. It's not college. And the transition from college to the NFL generally has not been easy for even the best. Now, when it's been good, it's been great. Jimmy Johnson was unbelievable. I mean, the best, really. He made a transition very easily. He killed it in the NFL. Pete Carroll comes to mind. Pete Carroll has had a really good second run through the NFL. But when it's been bad, it's been terrible. Think Steve Spurrier in Washington. Think Bobby Petrino quitting in the middle of the night on the Atlanta Falcons. Hell, think Nick Saban, the greatest college coach of all time, and this guy wasn't even average in the NFL. I mean, he wasn't as bad as you probably think that he was, but he sure as hell was not stacking Lombardis next to those snack cakes. So if the GOAT can't do it, there's no guarantee that Herb can do it. Except the difference is the situation. The Jags' job is a lot better than the Dolphins' job that Saban jumped into. Like Meyer, if he does this, he makes the leap into an organization that came about as close as you could to winning the AFC only a few years back, and then fell hard on hard times. But make no mistake, as bad as they are, and they're bad enough to get the first pick overall, it's still a good opportunity. In fact, it's an actually very good opportunity. Like Nick Saban was trying to make it work with Gus Frerotte, Joey Harrington, Dante Culpepper, Cleo Lemon. Let's just say that the law firm of Frerotte, Harrington, Culpepper, and Lemon was not exactly a crack squad. Except in Jacksonville, Herb would have Trevor Lawrence. That makes all the difference in the world. If you have the quarterback, you're more than halfway there. The rap on college coaches has always been that they can't recruit once they get to the NFL, that you're not guaranteed a massive talent advantage over your competition year in and year out. You know, the thing that Herb benefited from most, a massive talent advantage. Except in the NFL, you may not have that because of the way the draft is set up, but you got to have a quarterback. The most important position is quarterback, and the Jags have a chance to get a guy who almost everybody believes is going to be a generational quarterback. So if you're Herb, I could see where you take a look at that. Now, it doesn't mean it's a slam dunk. It's not a matter of having an intro presser in January 2021 and then holding a Super Bowl parade in February 22. There's still a hell of a lot of work and a lot of things that have to break right for that to happen or to come close. And by the way, there's no guarantee that the schemes, nor his approach, nor his system, nor his process, the things that he did at Florida or Ohio State are going to automatically translate to the NFL. Or that one of Meyer's edges, which has been his ability to inspire and reach and motivate teenagers and guys in their early 20s, are going to work the same way on grown-ass men. Now, in Meyer's defense, the rap against Pete Carroll was he was just some rah-rah guy and that crap wouldn't work either. You know, the stuff that worked so well for him at USC, that would not work in the NFL. And the fact is, it has. It's worked really well for him in the NFL. But if you're Urban Meyer and you're going to jump into another job for a few years before bailing for something else, this would be the one to jump into. It's not just that they've got a boatload of picks in the top 45. They've got cap space, and they've already got some young players who can play. So if you're Meyer and you're looking at Jacksonville, there is a lot to like about that situation. And if you're Jacksonville and you're looking at Herb, there may actually be some things to like about Herb. But there are a lot of things to be concerned about too. As an example, how is Herb going to handle the losses? There's a reason why they've got the number one pick. They lost a lot, and they still will. And this guy never really has lost. And the few times that he did lose, it damn near killed him. Literally. So what's going to happen if this guy takes that gig and gets his ass kicked 12 times next year or more? Is he going to bail on them the way he does and do some new contract with his family saying that he'll spend more time with them? Or quit and blame it on his health when in reality it's that he couldn't coach, lead, motivate, or scheme at this level? Who knows? I would just say this. Jacksonville, make sure that if you do this, do so with your eyes wide open, because there's no guarantee here. There's no guarantee other than if things start to go sideways, he will bounce, and he will bounce before you get the chance to blow him out. But I'm not saying that he can't get it done, and I'm not saying that he can't win there. Hey, you want to hear something amazing? Check this out. Discover matches all the cash back that you earn on your credit card at the end of your first year automatically, with no limit on how much you can earn. I mean, how amazing is that? In fact, it's even more amazing because of all the places where Discover is accepted. 99% of the places in the U.S. that take credit cards. So when it comes to Discover, get used to hearing yes more often. Learn more at discover.com/yes. Discover.com/yes. 2020 Nielsen Report. Limitations do apply.
Sam Amick.
My man Sam, what's going on? How are you?
Romy, hanging in there, sir. How the heck are you?
Good. I'm great. In fact, Sam, it's good to hear your voice. Listen, you have been all over the James Harden situation for months now. Early in the season, Sam Harden looked like himself to a certain extent. But when you saw how he played on Tuesday night against the Lakers and then the comments he made after that game, did it feel to you like that was a ticking time bomb and that they had to move him and do it sooner than later?
It did. Although what's funny about those types of situations, and I feel like the longer you cover pro sports in general, and certainly you know this, you learn that like those moments might seem organic in the moment, but then you quickly kind of go, wait a minute, why is everybody drinking the truth serum and everybody being candid publicly all of a sudden? And what you then learn is that the wheels had fallen off before those press conferences. And really, I think that was a reaction to what people involved knew was coming pretty quickly, which is that James was finally going to get his ticket out of town. But yeah, in that moment, you know, to see James give that 90-second press conference where he talks about how the situation can't be fixed, and then John Wall with a pretty scathing response of his own that night, you know, talking about how nine games in, how you going to jump off the cliff? Come on, what do you, you know, so you knew it was coming, and it obviously came pretty quick.
John Wall had that comment, and Boogie also made it pretty clear he was not happy with the way James Harden carried himself. You know, Sam, right. I want to get to the Brooklyn side of the trade in a moment, but overall, what about Houston? What do you think about the package that they received in return for Harden? In your opinion, did they get enough?
It's hard to tell because I kind of need to know and have more clarity about their intentions and their vision for the future, meaning, first of all, with the picks, four first-round picks, I mean, that's a tremendous haul kind of in a vacuum. But if Brooklyn pans out, if they are an elite team for years to come, those are going to be late first-round picks. And then the pick swaps that they got as part of that, you know, are going to be, you know, of kind of marginal value as well. You got the Cleveland pick in there, so that's, you know, a different lane. But then you're talking about, all right, Victor Oladipo, right here and right now, I can't wait to see him play with John Wall and DeMarcus Cousins and Eric Gordon and that whole group. But he's a free agent this summer. So did they bring him on board with the intent to re-sign him? We shall see. They get a trade exception out of this, too. How are they going to use that? So a little bit muddled for me in terms of how to see the Rocket package.
Sam Amick is a senior NBA writer for The Athletic. So they do get Oladipo, and we'll see about his future. But apparently, reportedly, Sam, they could have had Ben Simmons. Is there an argument that they should have made a deal instead with Philadelphia, which included Ben Simmons?
Yeah, I think for sure. And that's where, you know, the Rockets hate this reality, but there is just a lot of skepticism these days about from owner Tillman Fertitta on down, you know, is it the basketball the priority or is the business the priority and the financial side? And that's where you look at the Simmons situation and basketball-wise, you say, man, that's the best player who had been discussed in all of these different packages. And if you passed on an opportunity to get him, which they did, then, you know, I think that is worth scrutinizing. And I think, honestly, out in Philadelphia, where Rockets, former Rockets GM Daryl Morey was obviously running the ship for the Sixers, I think the Sixers probably believe they put the best package on the table in the bunch, but the Rockets went in a different direction.
We're talking to Sam Amick. You know, it seems to me, Sam, like we'll see whether or not it works and how it plays out, but there's no arguing the fact that the Nets are all in, man. They want to win. That's a big, big swing for them. I'm curious, though, what do you make of their motivation? Like, do they make this deal because they know they can't count on Kyrie Irving to come back? Do they make this deal because if you have a chance to get one of the all-time great scorers in NBA history, you pull the trigger and you make that happen? What was their motivation in making the deal?
So GM Sean Marks spoke about an hour ago, you know, offered some clarity, claimed that the Kyrie situation did not, you know, kind of further incentivize them to get motivated here and get this done. But it's, to me, it's still fair to somewhat connect those dots. Like, you know, it's common sense. You have pressure applied because one of your stars is MIA. You have Kevin Durant. I mean, and I don't know this to be true, but if Kevin was feeling like, man, I didn't plan on flying solo out here, I wouldn't blame him. And I think the takeaway for me is that Kevin very quickly within that Nets organization, and with good reason, I think has got a really serious voice. I think Kevin Durant had a lot to do with this move, his history with James Harden, and the way that he kind of envisioned how they could play together in this reunion. The obvious question, Jim, is, you know, three stars, one ball, high usage rates, and I'm dying to see it. And the secondary layer, which I also think is pretty compelling, is you got a rookie head coach in Steve Nash with a pretty impeccable pedigree as just a basketball person and a former MVP and all those things. You got James's old coach from Houston with Mike D'Antoni side by side with Steve. It's going to be wild to see them try to put these pieces together, but the level of uncertainty, both personality wise and just kind of the history with some of these guys. I mean, I think it's fair to wonder, is it going to go south? Is it going to work? You know, I'm not sure what direction it's going to go.
Sam Mamick, my guest, right? I mean, well said, Sam. I can't wait to see it. And I would say maybe 24, 36 hours ago, I really didn't give a damn about the Brooklyn Nets. And now I can't get enough. I mean, it's amazing. Right. I can't wait to see how it plays out. I hope it does play out. Like, what about Kyrie? I mean, in your mind, Sam, and basically in the reporting you've done, what exactly is he doing right now? What is your sense as to when or if he'll even be back? What's going on with Kyrie?
I don't have a lot of clarity there. I think very few folks do. You know, I mean, Sean Marks, Nets GM, said on his press conference that, you know, they were disappointed that Kyrie was not with the organization. But he's walking a kind of a tightrope when it comes to the way he's framing the situation. He's not trying to act like it's no big deal, not trying to act like they endorse Kyrie being away, but they are letting Kyrie speak for himself, which he hasn't done yet. He did indicate Kyrie is testing every day, kind of alluded to his belief that he is following the COVID protocol, which kind of flies in the face of that, you know, social media video of him at his sister's birthday party that is being investigated by the NBA. So that's the thing that's certainly hanging over all of them right now. And Sean even had a comment where he said, I've talked to all of our three stars and they've all raised their hand and said, I'm here, you know, I'm all in. And you're sitting there hearing that going, except that one of them is not. He's literally physically not there. And that's a big problem for them.
Yeah, right. I mean, for instance, I know you can't speculate unfairly, but when we hear that he is gone, Kyrie's gone for, quote, personal reasons, do you think they're personal reasons or do you think they're basketball reasons?
I think they're personal. You know, I think that, you know, some of the context that is fair to cite is that if you go back to the bubble experience, you know, Kyrie was kind of one of the first, if not the first and the loudest star to come out and say, I don't think we should be playing out there. He held a conference call with 90 plus players in which, you know, he let his opinion be known. Now, he was hurt at that time, and some people felt like it was a convenient stance to take because he wasn't going to be playing anyways. But I think, you know, there was conviction there at that time. And I wonder now, and I don't want to speculate too much, but you know, the social climate certainly hasn't gotten any better. The pandemic certainly hasn't gotten any better. Kyrie is the only one who can speak to his own state of mind and how much of this is family and society and mental health, or who knows, maybe basketball. We just don't know because, I mean, he made real clear early on this season, you know, he's not going to be open with the media. He had to have his, you know, got fined for not talking to the media. And so clarity is tough to come by.
Right. Sam Mamick is a senior NBA writer for The Athletic. And Sam, finally, what about COVID overall? Like, you've spoken to a number of head coaches about their feelings regarding COVID and the way the league is handling it at this point. What is your sense in how they feel about how it is playing out overall?
I mean, the best way I would describe it is people I've talked to, they're grinning and bearing it. You know what I mean? They understand the reasons for the league continuing. They know that, I mean, it's not hyperbolic to say that the business model is kind of in danger of being broken if they shut this season down. They already lost roughly $1.5 billion last season because of the stoppage and then the bubble approach. They, you know, it would have been a lot worse if the bubble wasn't successful. So people know why they're doing it. But like a lot of people, most people these days, you know, and what you do for a living, this is not what they signed up for. It's not comfortable. It's not familiar. And, you know, the coaches talking about trying to execute plays and play calls and argue with referees with a mask on, you know, players now not able to say hello to their colleagues after games or to just act like normal human beings. Again, it's the same thing everyone's going through, but It's a pretty tough time to make your living in a contact sport.
Hey, Sam, quick follow-up to that. The point about coaches, and they understand why they have to wear a mask, but they're having trouble communicating with the refs and the players. Is there any workaround for something like that, or is that just the way it's going to be?
I don't know. I mean, the one that I mentioned in my column this week, and I kind of gave a hat tip to my colleague and friend Fred Katz at The Athletic, who had tweeted, like, can we at least turn the music down in the arenas? Because, you know, that is something that is drowning out the coaches' voices. And I don't know the league's stance on that, but, and I haven't been to a game in person. A lot of media members have, but they report that the noise and the music and the entertainment aspect of the presentation is still at a really high level, which is obviously for TV, but I think the game itself should be prioritized, and the league needs to look at ways for these coaches to not feel like they can't do their jobs.
It was a huge, huge deal 2 months ahead of the NBA trade deadline. Sam Amick here to break it all down. He is a senior NBA writer for The Athletic, and you can read him there too. Sam, great to have you back. Thanks so much.
Appreciate it, Romy. Thanks, brother.
If you know this show, then you know that a caller to the show can get some serious long-term run if they do something truly memorable on the air. For instance, if you're getting a call of yours replayed and reset weeks, months, even years after the fact, you know you've made a huge impact. And sometimes the impact is good. Sometimes the impact, well, the impact's always, quote, good. Not always for the person who's making the impact. But the impact is pretty interesting. Sometimes that impact is just hilarious. Like Jim in Fall River talking about Andy Pettit. Sometimes the impact is just baffling. Like Kyle in Green Bay attempting to call me Jim, but instead accidentally glossing me Drew the Jumpman Gillett. Sometimes that impact is just regrettable. Like Toby in Houston turning into a crank inadvertently at a health club and then making sure to call the program and let all of us know what happened. Sometimes the impact is the individual becoming synonymous with a region or a town or even a team. Like how almost any time I bring up the Jacksonville Jaguars, I always think of and sometimes even play this legendary call from 2017 from Danica in Jacksonville.
Now, I'm out of money for season tickets, and the only thing I can do is go to the games, get drunk, find a little tenderoni, and take him home for the night and ruin him. I'm out.
Danica, the queen. Danica is also known as the tenderoni ruiner. Such an amazing call. Perfectly delivered, incredibly original, shocking, and supremely funny. And because of all those things, I still play that call pretty often, despite the fact that it was made nearly 4 years ago. Now, maybe you follow her on Twitter, at MsNika989. Maybe you do follow her just on the strength of that call alone. Maybe you don't. But it came to my attention recently that the Jacksonville Jaguars selected her, our very own, the queen, Danica, as the 2020 Fan of the Year. Here is part of the official press release from the Jags. Let me read this to you verbatim. Hail to the Queen. Danica Mitchell has been named the Jacksonville Jaguars Fan of the Year after receiving hundreds of nominations for the NFL Fan of the Year contest. The Jaguars have selected Mitchell for her lifetime of dedication to the franchise. She joins 31 other nominees from around the league as the NFL's greatest fans and will be recognized by the Jaguars during the team's annual fan appreciation game. Mitchell has become the Jaguars' greatest defender on social media and sports talk radio, even being given the nickname of the Queen for her frequent appearances on the Jim Rome Show. She represented the Jaguars once on his annual Smack Off, which recognizes the best callers to the show. End of bleeping quote. Oh man, that is so good. Check out the Jags getting nice and running with the Queen gloss and mentioning the Smack Off in an official NFL release. That is so awesome. So awesome. And a major shout out to Danica for getting the jungle some run in that official NFL team press release. Now, since Danica is the Jags Fan of the Year, They did, in fact, have her out to the stadium for the last home game of 2020 against the Bears. She had the honor of shouting out Duval before kickoff, which, of course, is a tradition in Jacksonville. Even though this happened in late December, the video only was making the rounds yesterday. So let's check this out.
Fans, in honor of Fan Appreciation Day, let's now welcome 11-year season ticket member and diehard Jaguars fanatic Danica Mitchell. Danica is also this year's Fan of the Year nominee for the Jacksonville Jaguars. All right, Danica, let's let the world know where we're from.
Duval!
Yeah, that's both, at the same time, one of the best and worst clips of all time. It's the best because Danica makes it the best, and she murders the Duval war cry. Unfortunately, one of the worst because the PA announcer butchered her name three different times.
Fans, in honor of Fan Appreciation Day, let's now welcome 11-year season ticket member and diehard Jaguars fanatic Danica Mitchell. Danica is also this year's Fan of the Year nominee for the Jacksonville Jaguars. All right, Danica, let's let the world know where we're from.
Duval!
You imagine if she had corrected him? You imagine if she had gone, yo, man, it's Danica, not Danica. Chief, I mean, she is your Fan of the Year. Could you not be bothered to check that out beforehand? Just Danica, to make sure you got the pronunciation correct.
Danica Mitchell. Danica. All right, Danica.
Damn, Danica. Damn, Jags. I like the Jags. I do. I really do. And I love the Jags for singling out, quote, Danica. But come on now.
Danica Mitchell.
Come on now.
All right, Danica.
You know what you just did? You just ruined the tenderoni ruiner. You just ruined the ruiner. Anyway, Danica tweeted the video yesterday and wrote, quote, "This would have been much better with a full house, but I'll take it. Still freaking awesome that I got to do it. I also knew they would get my name wrong or say my name wrong." That's how you handle that. That's why she's the queen. That's awesome. She wanted the full house. Danica's like, dang, I didn't get to do that in front of 80,000 people. I love it. She wanted the full house, and she knew they were going to butcher her name, but she still rolled with it and said it was amazing. When you're expecting your favorite team, when you are their best fan, when you're expecting your favorite team to botch something as simple as getting your name right, you know you're a fan. But she's a damn good fan. In fact, she's the best fan. The Fan of the Year, and she's a jungle icon, and she even got the jungle some run. I'm going to make that game day experience even better right now. Yo, Neek, I got you. You know I got you. I'm going to right the Jags wrong. Now, remember how Jalen Ramsey once shouted Duval and became a staple of the Jungle Sound Library? You remember?
Duval!
Legendary. Legendary, but not so appropriate anymore because Jalen's gone. Killing it here in L.A., but he's gone. He's with the Rams. However, the Queen and the Tenderoni Ruiner, they're still there. She's the Fan of the Year, and she is about to become the drop for Duval for the rest of time. From now on, this is the official Duval drop of the jungle.
Duval!
No more Jalen, all Danica. Congrats, Queen. Mike Budenholzer is my guest. Mike, it's so good to have you back. How are you, Mike?
I'm doing great, Jim. How are you doing?
Good, great. It's great to visit with you. Thanks for making time for the show. Let me start here. You beat Detroit last night in a game where you held the Pistons to 13 points in the first quarter. You got some really good looks on the offensive end. There was this sequence late in the first quarter where four players had three passes and two dribbles in 6 seconds, and it led to a three at the buzzer. Let me start right there. What kind of quick ball movement and offensive flow like that, how does that make you feel as a head coach?
Yeah, it's good when the ball's moving and we're playing with each other unselfishly, and it's popping around the court. It's just, you know, good things happen. So our ball movement, just our assists have been pretty good lately. And, you know, that's how we want to play. And, you know, we've got great players, and they're willing to play that way. You know, it can be fun to watch, fun to play. So, yeah, we'll see if we can get some more of those possessions.
Mike Budenholzer joining us. And then that was one of the 19 threes that you guys hit last night. You're currently second in the league in three-point shooting percentage. You've always encouraged your guys to let it fly from deep. And I know there's a lot of work to be done, but does it feel like this might be the best three-point shooting team you've had since you arrived there?
Yeah, no, I think, you know, it is early and there's a long ways to go. But I think, you know, John Horst, our GM, he's just phenomenal, does a great job. And I think we felt like we've prioritized shooting since we've been here, since I've been here together with John. But we felt like we needed to take it, you know, just try and get even better. And we do feel like it's better. And you know, we got to keep working to get those guys good looks, if the ball keeps moving. And, you know, we've got great players that can draw extra attention and then find shooters around them. So, but, yeah, with the additions of, you know, D.J. Augustine, Brent Forbes, Bobby Portis off our bench. You know, those guys can all really shoot it. Bobby's unique as a 5'4" that can spread the floor and just, you know, get a lot of buckets quick and including from behind the three-point line. So the shooting, you know, it's a big part of what we need around, you know, Chris and Giannis and Drew.
We're talking Bucks basketball. Head coach Mike Budenholzer, my guest. You know, when you mentioned Drew, like Drew Holiday had 21 last night, and then I thought it was really interesting what Giannis had to say afterwards. He said, quote, "I knew he was really good, but every day I play with him, I realize how good of a person he is, a good teammate he is, how much better he is than what I thought," end of quote. So what's it been like to work with Drew so far, and what's he bring to your team?
Yeah, it's been great. You know, Giannis said it well. I think, you know, it's interesting. I've been in the East now, I think, 7 years. Maybe this is going on eight. And obviously Giannis, you know, drafted 7-8 years ago. And so when teams play in the opposite conference, you just don't play them enough. And, you know, you don't see them in the playoffs. You don't dig in. So I think, you know, we were really excited when we signed him you know, made the trade for him. But, I mean, he's exceeded even our high expectations. And really, the human being is just off the charts. Getting to know him away from the court and everything he and his wife do to make a difference in, you know, whatever community they live in. They obviously both have roots in L.A. And, you know, it's been a great, great addition. And he's a great player, but, you know, even better human. And we feel like we're just getting to know him. He's going to get even better with us. So, yeah, I mean, just, you know, you could hear it in Giannis's words. And, you know, we're excited about him and what he brings.
Mike Budenholzer, my guest. Giannis obviously loves him. And speaking of Giannis, he had another triple-double last night, but it seems like he's at the point of his career where he can drop a triple-double, and he's got this kind of ability where it's almost a ho-hum thing. Like, it's practically just expected now that he would just go out there and just drop triple-doubles on everybody. How does he look to you so far this season?
Yeah, I mean, he's good, but, you know, I think he's somebody that needs, you know, lots of playing, lots of five-on-five. So I think the lack of, you know, kind of, you know, what we call open gym or the ramp up to a training camp and then a normal training camp, I think he's going to get better. I think, you know, his feel and touch and everything, you know, it's crazy. You know, he's got a triple-double. He's playing great, but I think he's going to get even better over the next month or so. And as then we, you know, you turn the corner and start heading towards the playoffs. You know, I think he's a guy that needs lots of reps, needs that touch and feel. And so while he's been good, I think he's going to get even better as we kind of get into the groove of the season.
Mike, it's kind of funny, but if you were to go back when it came down that he was going to re-sign with the team, how did you actually find out, and what was that moment like for you?
The actual moment, I got like a call from my son. I have a 22-year-old, a 15-year-old boys, and they're like, "It's done." I'm like, I knew it was coming. I was like, okay, he's going to send a tweet out at some point, but the actual tweet and the actual moment, I got a pretty cool phone call from my sons. And there's some yelling and screaming on the phone. And it was fun to share it with them. And, you know, kind of a little bit different than you'd expect to get that final, you know, kind of tweet or clarification or, you know, whatever you call it. So it was fun.
I think that's awesome that your sons told you. Like, so the decision itself for him to stay there, what does that mean to you, the organization, and the entire community? Because, you know, it's a smaller market, so a smaller market kind of responds a little bit differently to a team. What did that mean to everybody involved?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it means he's committed to us. He believes in us. You know, I think he wants to bring championships to the city of Milwaukee. He's all about winning. That's all he cares about. And, you know, when he's making a decision on where he can win. And, you know, he feels like he can win here in Milwaukee. You know, I think organizationally they've done a great job of cultivating a culture and putting him in a place to succeed from the day they drafted him, you know, which was way before I got here. And now, you know, 2 years, two plus since I've been here, you know, we've really been able to turn the corner on the winning front, win at a high level. You know, we've had some success in the playoffs, but we want a lot more. We want to be the last team standing. That's what he wants. And so, you know, the community loves him. He loves the community and organizationally, teammates, everywhere. It's just, you know, it's a great feeling when a guy, you know, commits to you and says he wants to stay and believes in what, you know, what he can do himself individually and what we can do collectively.
No doubt. I think that's so great for you, for him, for them, for the community. I think for the league overall, it's just a great, great thing.
Yeah.
So that's a good deal. What about this, Mike? I know you're concerned about your team, but when you see the business of basketball and the deal that was made yesterday, the Nets end up getting James Harden. I'm kind of curious, like, what was your reaction to just the magnitude, the size of that deal, and then your reaction to the arrival of another superstar in the East?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's just there's so many players and picks, and it's just, you know, it's one of those ones that, you know, kind of rocks our world. And, you know, I think the signals have been out there. You know, at some point Harden was probably, you know, going to be moved and was going to be playing somewhere different, and it felt like maybe it was going to be the East. So, you know, we're all kind of, you know, there's a little bit of fan even in all of us, and so you see it and you try and digest it. And you know, certainly going to be a ton of individual talent, you know, there in Brooklyn. And Harden's a heck of a player, and he joins it, you know, with Durant and Irving. You know, just it's a pretty impressive collection of individual talent. Now they got to figure out how to work as a team and put it together that way. You know, but we love our team. We're, you know, like you said, we're focused. At the end of the day, you acknowledge it, you kind of check your phone for a few minutes, get a few texts, and then, you know, you got to get back to your business, get back to your world, and we'll be excited to play whoever it is, you know, every night, and, you know, try and beat whoever it is in front of us.
Okay, get back to that process. Mike, before I let you go, let me ask you this. Last month, after team workouts finished on December 4th, the story goes that you gave assistant video coordinator Jordan Spears and some of his colleagues an assignment to get some tape and to update the blue boxes on the floor of the practice facility. These blue boxes have become the stuff of legend. For those who do not know, what are those boxes about, and why do you want them on the floor?
Yeah, well, it's all about spacing. You know, we're trying to build, you know, great spacing. When you have great players, you want to have great spacing around them. You know, all of the legends in our league, you know, I think they've, you know, hopefully their coaches and their teammates have tried to give them space to be great. And, you know, we're just always trying to kind of build our habits and, you know, give attention to detail for, you know, where we want to be and, you know, create space for, you know, it's not just Giannis, for Chris, for Drew, for everybody. It's a game of spacing and angles. And, you know, it's a game that's always evolving and changing and tweaked. And so, you know, we've tried to, you know, grow with it and try and figure out what's best for our group. And, yeah, so it's just, you know, there's always different ways to teach and incorporate and build habits. And, you know, it's been something we've done here for a few years, and we're just trying to keep working and trying to keep getting better.
Hey, Mike, one last thought. You know, in terms of COVID, a number of coaches have talked about the challenge and the frustration in having to wear masks. I mean, I'm sure everybody understands and agrees with the importance of wearing them, but you do need to communicate with your players. You do need to communicate with the officials. What's it been like for you to do so through a mask, and is there any kind of workaround?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's certainly, you know, changes that dynamic, and it's not what we want in an ideal world, but we're not living in an ideal times. And, you know, I think everybody's adjusted, and you know, there's moments where, you know, either with one of your players or, you know, whatever the circumstances may be, you may need to pull it down for a quick second and communicate. And, but I think, you know, without the fans and the noise, is just, we can manage. We can wear our masks. We can still get our jobs done, and we can do what's right for, you know, the safety of our players, safety of our league, safety of our country. It's a small ask, and, you know, I think the coaches in general, and hopefully hopefully me, I'm sure I'm screwing up occasionally, but doing my best to try and follow the guidelines and still get the job done.
Good night now!